Stephanie, would you call roll?
Joyce Still.
Here.
David Happ.
Here.
Cheryl Hanley Maxwell.
Here.
Mike Smith. Deb Roush.
Here. Okay. Are there any changes to the agenda? No? Okay. I'd like to make a motion then to approve the agenda.
Second.
Discussion? Okay. Aye. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Agenda's approved. Number four, citizen input. Public participation.
I wanted to make sure that wasn't Felicia because I'm going to speak on her behalf. Last week, DSC served as a headquarters. I don't know if you guys are familiar, so this is more just an FYI, for a Walk as One event that is sponsored by the United Way, that is for kind of outreach of low-income families, socioeconomic. And they, along with, there's members from Carl, service providers, lots of community volunteers, and the Champaign Police Department. And they were broken into kind of teams that focused on different areas of the community. And so DSC served as a hub that hit like the Hedge Road area and kind of within a mile or less walking distance from the agency. But it was just a really nice collaboration. I was glad to kind of see the community support. There were probably 50 or 60 people that broke into seven teams and went door knocking. That's basically a knock and talk to tell about the services that are available in the community, whether it's for DD services, mental health, health, for EI. And so it was just a really nice collaboration, and I'd not been part of that in the past, but got to see it, you know, in motion. And it was, like I said, there were several pockets all over the community that, that worked together to make that happen. So I was going to ask Felicia to mention that. Yes, ma'am. Is it? Okay.
But that one, I think, had a focus on the pre-K efforts in this community, which are, you know, this board and the mental health board has made some really solid investments in childhood over the years. And so I think your organization is sort of well represented in that.
Mm-hmm. And I think there's, you know, there's some interest with Carl doing some mobile activity to pick up some people that are not typically in doctor's offices and Francis Nelson or well connected. So it, there's some good, cool things happening for that, definitely that demographic. So just wanted to share.
Thank you. Anybody else? Okay. Well, thank you for that.
We don't have a reputation, or pardon me, a representative from MHB here today, but do you have moves to share, Lynn?
Sure, I can do it.
Sure.
The Mental Health Board will meet this evening at 5:30, and they have their agenda is a little bit parallel to yours. They don't have the copy of the current year funding priorities is not in their board packet because it will be used as a discussion starter next week. They're going to have a study session to talk about priorities. But they have a draft of this, the final year of their three-year plan. They're meeting for the first time after a couple months break. So they also have a revised budget to look at and a CILA budget to look at for the first time. We have not had a budget with the county for that fund. We've just managed it through PNC Bank only. And now we have enough information to safely establish a budget, but it also shows that we have more revenue than expenditures predicted. So I think during next year, it will be good for both boards to talk about the future of that fund, if we want to make changes to it or expand on it. That difference is growing, so it's good investments by the treasurer's office, but it's also an overestimate of expenditures. So, anyway, I think that's it. They're sort of the same orders of business as yours.
Okay, moving on to item six, the CCDDB board meeting minutes from the July 19th meeting are in the packet, starting on page 3. I would like to move that we accept them as presented.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, they are approved. I don't have any real comments to make today, except that I'm glad to hear we're going to have some more money.
That's always
good news. So.
Okay.
Well, I made a list so that I wouldn't prattle on and on, but I still might. So I'll try to keep it quick because I know that everyone has pressing business today. The most important thing on the list is that on October 21st, which is before your next meeting, so this is the last time I can show you. I'm going to pull this out and show it. On October 21st at Lincoln Square from noon to 3, we're having a festival instead of an expo because the expo is happening in April and we don't want people to forget about the expo or think that they missed it. Thank you, Mark. So we're going to have a festival to celebrate. The whole lot of the people being celebrated in this are people with disabilities or are advocates for people with disabilities. And we will also hopefully have some information about the website for the expo has actually turned into a pretty robust resource directory of services in the county. The problem that I hear about with 211 that this also has is that many of the phone numbers you call take you to either a disconnected line because the agency has gone out of business or reduced their hours, or you get on a wait list. So some of the problems about accessing resources are really apart from resource directories and expos. They're about shoring up the services themselves. So we need to work on that too. But the resource directory is hopefully a helpful guide. We've also been working this summer on looking at all of our websites for accessibility problems. So that site will be rebuilt in a platform that allows it to be as accessible as possible. So we're really kind of focused on it right now. And while we're doing that, we may be able to make it more comprehensive too. So hopefully at this event, we can spread information about the site and maybe that will be useful for people until the April 7th expo. So that's the big news. Things that we've been working on in the office include these the three-year plans for next year, the financial system that's online, the tool that we're using for tracking our financial activity should be available to board members to look at, you know, when you log into the application website, you should be able to see the financial system too. If you choose not to access it that way, you could call or email and we can generate reports or answer questions from that. Chris and I are trying to keep that as current as possible. Stephanie had maintained it for the first 3 or 4 months of its life with us, and so it was not real hard for him to make the tweaks, but he did ask for a few tweaks to make it a little bit more user-friendly and a little bit more complete. So hopefully that's helpful to you, either on your own or with staff support. The other major project is our data collection system for the DD services. And I was thanking people in the audience earlier for bearing with us through this project because it's a major change in the way that they document and report service activities. But we hope that it will help us understand what the array of activities really looks like. This last year, a whole lot of our applications for funding were around service coordination and advocacy. And so we want to see, you know, just if we're paying for lots of connection to services, to make sure that there are services for people to connect to. So the agencies are being very patient with us as we identify which services we want to see. So, and they were all derived from the applications. So that's another piece. Of course, there's stuff going on with the state that might come up in a few minutes when we ask for agency input. And I've sent you a couple emails that are sort of roughly about what's happening there, but we'll get into that later. The changes in the budget documents, the reason that you're asked to look at a revised budget for next year is that the property tax revenue anticipated for next year is a lot more than what we expected when we put the first budget together. So we put the difference just straightforwardly into contributions and grants. There was a mistake in my earlier budgets around the cost of personnel. So that mistake has been adjusted and picked up in other, like, copier supplies, just very small. It was not big. So we distributed it in office operations, and that was based on Chris's study of actual usage over the last 5 years. So that was, it was really nice to have that information. It's so nice to have him. And the SILA budget, as I said, is based on real activity over the last few years. It was also put together by the woman who manages the auditor's office. She has a CPA, and she's been very helpful with that fund over the years. These were her suggestions. So I think that's it. We'll move on to the other business.
Okay, agenda item 9 is consultant staff reports. They begin on page 7 of the packet and go through page 25. There are reports from Barbara Bresner, Kim Bowdry, Stephanie Howard Gallo, Chandra Somerville, and Chris Wilson. I just want to say that I really appreciate their reports. It really helps me to know what's going on and what everybody's been working on in the office. Did anybody want to make a comment? I think Stephanie is the only one here. Okay.
I noticed in Kim Bowdry's report, staff report, there is a paragraph about trauma-informed care for individuals with intellectual and developmental disabilities. I have questions this morning for a couple of people from different agencies. So when it's agency information, I will bring those up. But I wanted to draw attention to this particular one because of some things that I've learned in the last month. So just for everybody's sake, just to let you know, that's one I'm extremely interested in.
Okay, so item 10 is agency information.
Dale Moore, CDSC. I guess I could have brought this up earlier in the agenda, but I think many of you may be aware that when the legislation finished this year, they did approve a 75 cent an hour for DSPs. I think many of you know that our goal was $15 an hour, and I don't want to slight the 75 cents. It's for the individual employees, that's a boost, but it's far cry from going to be able to solve our staffing shortage. It's not going to even come close. Many organizations are going to have challenges with this because they sort of backed into the 75 cents. And so, I'm pleased that we had some success, and don't get me wrong. The challenges we have, some organizations were way, way below, like close to the minimum wage, so this is pretty easy for them to bump into that. Other organizations, as they went through this, went ahead and gave some a dollar earlier or 75 cents or whatever earlier, and now what do they do? Do they have to give it again when they didn't have resources? They were doing it just to try to keep staff on and support. Organizations like us that were already above the rate and are already subsidizing that through our donated dollar and, you know, our stretch to the minute, so how do you do that? Our challenge, many organizations that are 90 to 100% funded by the state, which a lot of them are, by the way, this is an easier call for some of them. We have a major challenge, as I shared over the last year and a half I've shared with you. Our major challenge now is who gets it. Well, a lot of people have to decide who is a DSP and who's not. They've put some murky clarity in that. How's that? You know, nurses are included, but at what level? Does a DSP, what becomes administration? What's a supervisor? Is our person that's the manager in our DT that's really doing direct service 60% of the day and over-supervising, does that person get it or don't? But the challenge we really have, because of our diversification of funding with the Developmental Disability Board and our other funding, that's only for part of the DSPs, and how do you take care of the other DSPs? And we have that challenge. And so do you take that and reduce it and spread it among everybody so now it becomes 40 or 50 cents? We don't know. Our board has to deal with that challenge. The state's allowing some flexibility, but expectations get changed in that too. So how you treat everybody fairly but still get that done. So my sharing that with you is that I sort of told you this a year and a half ago. If we're successful, even if it's with success, it causes some challenges, and that's what we have, because without additional resources to do that, how do we spread that across? But all organizations across the state are going to be dealing with that in different matters, and I'm sure even in this room some others will have to deal with that. And so our long-term goal is still to get that to $15 an hour, so no matter how we end up implementing this, to re-rally the troops, to get it to a level that pays our people a wage that they've earned, and also to allow us to make sure we can stay fully staffed and continue to grow and expand in the community activities that we want to do, and the living environments can be smaller and do the things we all are striving to do. So thank you. Any questions?
Yep.
Okay.
Basically, how did you know that I was going to ask about that? But the 75 cents that is allocated for that, yes, it's teensy tiny little progress. And yes, we need to keep pushing for the $15 an hour. Evidently, the state of Illinois thinks that it's okay to pay people who help elderly people and need that help $15 an hour, but it's not okay to pay people who are actually saving families and clients. And that bothers me a lot. But that was something that I did want to ask you about. And how does the state decide who is a DSP? I mean, do they have a definition of what a DSP is?
Well, yeah, that's what I said. It's not really clear. The good news is, I guess, they're allowing some organizations some flexibility in this. Now, if I get that 75 cents an hour, that'd be a major problem. I mean, that's clearly administrative. But it's not clear. In other words, is that mid-manager? They're not going to come look. They've made it real clear. They're not going to come and do an audit behind and how people choose it. The reason it's easy for them to say that, they know that the formula they've used is not enough to truly give everybody 75 cents. Even if you were truly 100% funded, the formula they backed into it, because it's based upon instead of just taking a rate change and changing it by 75 cents, what they did, it's real complicated, but they've taken if a staff ratio for some people in developmental training are 1-3, it's blended. If it's 1-5 in another, it's blended. So you can't just take 75 cents and give every employee 75 cents. It's based upon that you're assuming that you're following the staff-to-client ratios that they've established. So I don't know if I'm helping make it clear or not, but to tell you they're not going to come by and do an audit. If an organization like us says, okay, in order to spread it, you're going to do it differently than that, you're going to have something that you can rationalize that you're truly doing that was the intent was to benefit the employees. And for some organizations, it's just not going to be as clear.
Is the state paying you now? Are they giving you the money that supposedly they were supposed to give you?
Until last month, we were further behind by – they were delaying us some, but
–
That's the other thing with this wage. It's effective, retroactive to August 1st. The money will most likely come before the paperwork, and so you really won't have the documented individual rate sheets that says what the money is until a few more months. And, of course, everybody's expectation is that we need to do something, and so that's complicated too.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you for listening.
Hi, I'm Becca Obachowski with Community Choices. Just to change gears a little bit, I just wanted to let you guys know about a collaboration that we got started on actually just yesterday, sort of officially, with DSC. It's from a grant that we have through the Illinois Council on Developmental Disabilities that's focusing on creating influence for people with disabilities in the community. We're going to do a series of community conversations as a part of a three-pronged approach. But we're really excited. One of the goals that we had for ourselves in this process was to try to bring in self-advocates from all sort of different areas of the community that might not be involved with Community Choices. And so we reached out to Kim Harris and Annette at DSC to see if their self-advocates might be interested. They brought it to their group, and they were very excited. So yesterday we kind of all met together and talked about what some next steps would be. And it's just, I'm really excited about it, and it seemed like all the self-advocates that were at the meeting were really excited about it. So just want to let you know that was kind of starting to sort of come together, which is really nice to see for the community. So that's it.
Thank you, Becca.
I would like to ask a couple of questions to someone who is here from Rosecrans. If you would come up to the microphone. I'm going to throw out a hypothetical because I really don't know how it works, and I would really like to know. In the event that a family calls for help, they have both a DDMI diagnosis. How do you handle that if there is an emergency in the family?
Okay, if they're calling in just to the agency, what would happen is one of our intake workers would screen that individual, okay? Try to get...
But this is an emergency.
An emergency. If it was an emergency, then the family could walk into the agency, see one of our crisis workers. They would get involved with finding out what the situation was. They would help to determine what needed to happen from there. They might call in, well, you know, right now we're in a transition period with Miranda having left and we're trying to replace that position. They might call me in for consultation on what needs to happen, and they would try to create a plan, a best plan to meet that person's needs.
What about an issue where this particular person is taken to jail? Is that an emergency?
Where the person is taken to jail?
Because of the mental illness. Let's say it's bipolar, and they have something that happens. It's a crisis for the family. Family calls in. It never happens at a convenient time.
Right.
So what happens when a family calls in and they have an emergency and the police are called, and the police then are taking that person to jail? This is a vulnerable person. So the family calls in. What happens when the family calls in, say, a Sunday night at 8 o'clock or something? Who do they talk to?
They would get one of our crisis workers.
Okay.
Who they would end up speaking with.
Okay. And let's just say that that person does go to the jail.
Mm-hmm.
They are not able, the family is not able to give the person the medication that they need. And they've called. And they're talking to the crisis person, and the crisis person asks, number one, are they in jail? Yes. Then it's not an emergency anymore. That is actually something that happened, and I was shocked by that. And the reason that it was not an emergency was because they were in jail.
Mm-hmm.
When we look at trauma care for people who have DD and also have MI, we have given your organization money for a person that will handle those things. Would you consider that handled at that point?
Well, I would have hoped that they would have talked with somebody else, you know, to get our, we do have staff there that are housed in the jail. It's during the day to get that information to them to be able for that case manager in the jail to follow that through more to find out exactly what was going on and to assist, because she's very good at advocating for people that are in the jail and getting what needs to be done.
Okay.
And I did that the next day.
I know you did. The reality of this is that I guess I'm concerned about the actual care that is given to a family that has a person like this and is fairly meek most of the time but has a crisis. If you are told as a parent that the emergency is no longer viable because they're in jail, what you're saying is, and actually it has been saying, is that they're safe now. That person is safe now. Is that the idea behind that? That they are in jail, therefore they are safe?
I can't answer that because I wasn't in that situation, but I wouldn't say that they're safe because they're very vulnerable.
Yes.
This is a vulnerable individual.
Have you hired someone to handle this kind of thing? Is there a person that our dollars are paying for?
We're in the transition period. I'm trying to find a replacement for Miranda.
And what kind of efforts do you have to go to find someone like that?
That it's being, you know, our human resource department through Rosecrans is advertising. They are, you know, in various different avenues.
And
trying
how long?
To bring somebody in. This is like a real specialized position. I mean, we're looking for somebody that's got good DD experience and some mental illness experience. Mm-hmm. And it's very hard to find. I mean, when the other two people have left, it was like a couple months in between that I was able to find somebody. I've in turn stepped in and taken over with a lot of that caseload and have started seeing many of those individuals.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I understand that it's probably difficult to hire someone like that. The efforts that you go to hire someone like that, what do those include?
That is kind of out of my hands. Our human resource department takes care of that. You know, in making contacts, with the School of Social Work. They have various different organizations they make contacts with. They have job fairs that they go to that they try to, you know, solicit individuals, you know, to come and work for our organization, those kind of things.
Okay, so what I'm getting at is we have budgeted a certain amount of money that's going to go to your organization for this particular thing. Is there any other thing? I mean, you have to go through human resources. Where is human resources? Is it here?
No, it's in Rockford.
It's in Rockford. Okay. That to me seems like a relatively large problem. If we've got, I mean, mental health and DD care are what our dollars are going for. And it seems to me that if we have an organization that is actually doing all they can do to hire someone, how do we know they're really doing it if they are in Rockford? How do they go about doing that here in Champaign-Urbana?
I'm sorry, but Joyce, I don't have all the answers.
Oh, I know you don't.
I know. I will take this on up the ladder.
I would appreciate that.
Believe me, I will.
Yeah, and you know there are our problem now. I guess I'm running out of patience. That's pretty much what's happening. Not with you, but with the whole system being treated as that ugly stepchild. You know, it gets to a point where we need to use our dollars where they really work. And I believe that someone can be found for that. But is it important to human resources in Rockford to find somebody for here? Do you have any idea? Are they being helpful?
Yes. And I was just talking with Lynn this morning. I just got a resume of a very good candidate yesterday, and I was running it by Lynn to see if she felt like it would be appropriate.
Okay.
And we both kind of agreed that we think it is. The person would be. So I will be getting them in for an interview ASAP.
Good.
Okay.
I appreciate that.
Because believe me, I want to fill this position just
as much. I'm sure you do. But I think when something like this comes out in the public, it gets more attention.
Mm-hmm.
I'm bringing it out into the public. It looks to me like we need to, as a board, think a lot about funding something that is coming from another place rather than here. This is our county. These are our county dollars. They need to be spent in ways that actually benefit the people that we are here to serve.
Right. This program is serving the individuals and the clients in this county.
Oh, I understand in mental health. It is. DD, on the other hand, DD and MI together is always probably going to be that stepchild.
Mm-hmm.
Because what happens is, you know, where are your people speaking up? There are people, not you, I'm not saying
right,
you.
Right.
But I'm just saying, it seems to me that we need to make this really public for people to understand what is happening with the dollars that we're spending. And this whole thing just reeks of, you know what, these people can't speak for themselves. So, hey, that's where we're going to go, and we're not going to do what we need to do in that. Then, again, this has nothing to do with you, but then we look at DSP pay.
Mm-hmm.
In this, it has to do with the people that are the most vulnerable. Therefore, they cannot speak up for themselves. And all of you do that. I'm very aware that you all do that. And I'm just losing patience. I have seen services go from absolutely nothing to really pretty good services, mm-hmm. over the years. And now I'm seeing it go back the other way because this state will not do what needs to be done.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, I guess we just got to keep going. But if you can hire someone, please.
Oh, believe me.
I know. Okay. And that was a terrible thing. Plus, we have a family that has contacted me about being on waiting lists. And again, agencies are put in that position. There is a finite number of people that can be served by a finite number of people. And I understand that. And I'm sure all of you are just as frustrated as I am, but I hate to see it going that way because I've seen it when they actually have money to do what needs to be done.
Mm-hmm.
So we just need to keep speaking up, I guess.
It was really good for a couple of years, wasn't it?
It was for a couple of years. It was great. But, you know, these agencies are doing everything they possibly can. I'm just not sure we're doing the right thing with an organization that, I mean, we need to look into it, with an organization that has HR in Rockford when we have problems right here that we need to solve. So you're my poster person for that, I guess.
Okay.
All right, thanks.
All right.
Just to
reference your comment about, you know, seeing things somewhat improve and now we're doing a backslide. It's just so disconcerting, just disheartening. Neither word is strong enough to describe what I feel about the fact that now we're walking away from a more appropriate Scylla options to back to stuffing eight people in a four-bedroom house. It just bothers me so much to see that that it's being allowed to revisit that.
Sometimes I think if every person who is on a waiting list for their loved one or for someone they know, and they all came to a meeting, we'd hear a lot more about what is going on. And if they all came to Springfield with us or something along those lines, it would be very, very helpful. Because families suffer in silence. Yes. They do. And we can't afford to do that. We have to suffer in public, I guess. So that's where I am. Soapbox over.
So, Joyce, when you first brought up the issue, it was related to the addition of trauma-informed care.
Yes.
And when Kim started talking about that, I thought that was really wonderful. We are all part of the secret society of DD. Like, it's really not just the individuals with DD who are hidden from the rest of the world. It's their families, and it's us as providers and planners and policymakers, even at national conference. It's shocking how we're all just at one little table at the end of the conference after everybody else has left, and now we're going to talk about DD. Like, this is the same problem. I think that it's not a mystery that the funding drains away because we're not represented, and the people we're supposed to be representing are not represented. So part of that isolation and segregation is our response to the trauma, and it furthers the trauma. So I think it's really great that Kim wants to take this on. I hope it is productive. So,
okay, moving on to financial reports. On page 26 of the packet, we have the claims for this past month. Would anybody like to make a motion?
I move that we accept the financial report as given in our packet.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay. It's approved. New business. Integration transition successes. Do we have some good news?
I think it's good news. Annette Becker, DSC. First, I wanted to say that in kind of following up on Becca's conversation about the self-advocates from DSC and Community Choices working together, we are so excited about that. Both Kim and Becca are so encouraging and so person-centered, and I think DSC self-advocacy group has kind of evolved, and so I'm, you know, really excited to see them working together for the benefit of the community. So what I wanted to share a little bit about three different paths to community, and two of those being employment and one of them being a volunteer opportunity. Middle-aged man that has been with DSC many years has had multiple jobs in the community. Usually within 2 or 3 weeks, he's asking the boss, do I have to work here forever? And so that employment is pretty short-term at that point. And then he comes back to our in-house programs, and then he'll ask, do I have to work here forever? And so we pretty much just said, no, you don't have to. You don't have to work here. And so he started participating in one of our volunteer groups that went to Salt and Light. And he said, you know, I think I would like to work here. And so we talked to him about how he was dressed, needing to take a shower, shave, you know, be presentable. The next time the group went, he had done all of those things. When they got to Salt and Light, they helped him initiate that process himself. And they don't hire people, but they were very interested in him volunteering there. He started out with one day. He gets there on his own. What he gets in return for his service is vouchers so that he can spend money. He can spend those vouchers there. He went from one day a week to 2 days per week. He made that request himself. It's now been, I think, at least 4 to 5 months. He has not asked him once, do I have to, how long, you know, do I have to work here forever? And so, you know, that was a case of us helping somebody really follow their own interest. And I think there was more personal investment because he had made the effort to get that himself, and we just supported him in that. Another person, you know, sometimes because we know people really well, they may not be open in job development actively, and we know that the right job match is going to have to be very specific, both in the work environment and the boss. We have had the opportunity to work with Scotties, and they were looking for a particular job match that we knew would match one of the people that we support. Her dream job is to work in theater, and she is very theatrical. She's very social, and so she is a hostess. She memorizes all the specials. From what I understand, there are a lot of regular customers who come in and will ask to be seated by her. And again, she's been there, I believe, at least 5 months, and she recently was awarded the Employee of the Month from Scotty's, so that was pretty cool. And then yet a different path. You know, we have some people who have been in our in-house programs for a long time, and they really don't want to leave. And so we're continually encouraging that to happen. And there's one gentleman who would do very well working in the community. There's nothing, absolutely nothing, that he can learn anymore from the in-house programs. And so a year, just over a year ago, he and I had a conversation. I said, you must start looking for another job. This is not a permanent place for you to work. So for 9 to 10 months, we had many conversations with him coming into my office with just this sense of panic, I'm not ready, I'm not ready. And throughout that time, his job developer was working with him, just going out and visiting businesses, doing some short-term volunteer opportunities. And about, I lose track of time, it's probably been a month and a half ago, he was hired at The Gap. He was very, very nervous about it, and after his third day, he came into my office just absolutely beaming because he absolutely loves his job. And his picture was just recently put up on the Wall of Fame. We have at our Clark Road facility, we have a wall where we have pictures of everybody who's moved from in-house to community employment. And so his picture is up there now with everybody else. And the really cool thing is we now have also started a job club for people who are thinking about making that move but are anxious like this man was. And it's a 12-week class, and part of it is visiting businesses, having business owners come in. We're still working on that piece. But we're also going to have people who have gone into the community, and they'll come back and talk to the class about what were their fears, what was the experience like for them, and what are their thoughts or experiences now that they have moved into the community. So that's it. Thank you.
I had
just two quick sort of stories I wanted to share with you. The first, kind of similar to the story that Annette told, was we've been working with this young man. He's in his sort of mid to late 20s and had been very, very anxious about getting a job, and his family had really been pushing him to, you know, get out there and was really wanting him to do something very, very professional. And he sort of expressed to us that that was not something he felt particularly comfortable with. And we decided to sort of look into something that was working with kids, and we found him a job working at one of the local pools. That was kind of, he had an out at the end because it was like, well, you know, you don't have to stay after the end of the summer if you don't like it. And it turned out to be such a great fit. He immediately, he ended up getting more hours right away. And then he's very humble. And he didn't even tell us. It was actually his boss, like, emailed us later and said, you know, we had a kind of award ceremony with our staff at the end of the summer, and the other staff all nominated him for, it was like most improved and like friendliest employee. So we were very excited for him. And then he actually decided he really still liked it, and they offered him continuing, you know, year-round employment. So that was a really great opportunity for him, and really to just see him sort of grow into that role and really gain a lot of confidence, which I think kind of going into it was a bit of a challenge for him. So I want to tell about that. And then the other project that we've gotten started this summer is through the support of the board, we have been able to set up a one house with a community builder, so basically like a supportive roommate. And this has been sort of going on for some time. Those individuals are actually all, they decided they didn't need their community builder anymore, and they brought in an additional roommate. But we were able to take that model and apply it to an individual who has state funding through the home-based support program, and we're now helping her to use that state funding to help pay for a community builder in the house that she's living in, and sort of we're supporting the community builder to set up personal support workers and help the home sort of run independently, sort of so her parents can have a little bit of a step back. I think she and them were both felt that it was time for that. And anyway, so that just got started in August. So we helped her find a new community builder, and sort of now we're working on making sure all of the support people that are working with her throughout the day, in addition to that sort of live-in support, are all on the same page. And so far, it's, you know, there's always transitions, but it's going really well, and really, really excited to experiment using some of the state funding to make some of those alternative living situations work. So that's it.
Hey, thank you, Becca. Okay, moving on, beginning on page 27, board action is required. We have a revised 2018 CCDDB budget and a new 2018 SILA fund budget. I guess I should move that we accept the budget, the revised budgets as presented.
Second.
Discussion?
I have a question, but we'll probably have to wait for Lynn to come back.
We might.
I'm not sure what the increase was. I mean, I looked through the numbers. I couldn't figure it out. Maybe one of you did.
She discussed that briefly. Here she comes
now. Yeah, she didn't say how much it was.
She said,
oh.
I'm sorry. Becca's first anecdote.
We moved on to the budget discussion, but.
It did run.
Yes, I'm sorry.
Do you have any questions about the budget?
Pius has a question about the budget.
Yeah, on the revised budget, how much was the increase? I mean, I couldn't figure it out from. Just roughly, just, you know, percentage wise or numbers, round numbers.
Oh.
Use the microphone. It's not much then, really,
no,
in the big picture.
It's nice to have.
Well, it's better to have an increase. Yeah, I agree.
And it's just due to changes in the projected
yeah.
revenue stream, income from taxes, basically. Okay.
The difference in
And then the other difference, as I explained before, doesn't, you don't. I had to lower the personnel costs a little bit, and then Chris found places where I hadn't put a lot of money into lines that we typically use more than that. So, you know, we were trying to save money. We've got, it's just sort of the new attitude in the office. Stephanie is in charge of office supplies, and she's, right, counting the staples and... You have saved us so much money already this year, and I was just trying to continue that, but Chris said, well, you know, some of these cuts really are a little too deep. So those changes are not reflected in your budget, but they are in the background.
I just want to say I really like the layout, the appearance, the readability, the transparency, just all the information that we get in such a user-friendly manner, especially for somebody who doesn't have an accounting background. This is so nice to be able to see what's what. Yeah, it's great for me. Any other discussion? Okay, so all in favor of accepting the revised budget as presented?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? All right, it's accepted. Oh.
Joyce Still?
Yes.
David Happ?
Yes.
Cheryl Hanley Maxwell?
Yes.
Deb Roush?
Yes.
Just want to point out that often votes concerning money will concern a certain, like a supermajority, but the only way to determine that is to either have a roll call or a standing vote. So sometimes roll call is a sort of a default way of determining you've got that majority. So, but this case is just a simple majority. So, but I'm not sure about that.
Okay. Do we want to step back? Do you have another transition success story to share, Lynn?
Oh.
Does anybody mind if we step back for a moment or? Ah, yes. Yes. Okay. So, again, I guess we should take a roll call.
Well, we need a motion.
Did we? Okay, I thought maybe it was all comprehensive, one big motion before to discuss both budgets. Or do we have to do individually?
I need two different motions in case you had.
Okay.
If you want to take issue with either budget.
Okay. All right. Would somebody like to make a motion?
I'd like to move that we approve the CCDDB budget. New SILA funding as presented in the packet.
Second. Discussion? Roll.
Joyce Still?
Yes.
David Happ?
Yes.
Cheryl Hanley Maxwell?
Yes.
Deb Roush?
Yes. Okay, beginning on page 35, we have the CCDDB three-year plan with draft FY 2018 objectives. This is included for information and discussion. Is there discussion? Did you want to make a comment?
So the next step will be that we'll distribute this document to agency providers and other stakeholders for comments and bring it back to you. I don't know. I think we're saying we'll bring it back in November. We could bring it back earlier, but so there'll be a little bit of breathing space. And if you have comments about it during that period, let me know, and we'll bring back what we hope is a final document in November, and then obviously we can revisit it in December if we need to.
Okay. Regarding the report to the court, there is a kind of cloudy, nebulous report to the court that's due at some unstated, unknown time. And so there's, Lynn has begun generating some ideas about how to do that. We've talked about that for the last 60 days or so, about how we need to do that. So just for information purposes, there will be a report coming at some point.
Well, actually, if you want to, so what happens, every once in a while I read the statute, and then this year we had an organizational assessment at the top of the year. It was being led by a person who did this work for 30 years, and he was also familiar with the statute, and we read it together, and he said, you know, I mean, I knew you're not required to do an annual report. You're not required to do a three-year plan. There's really not a lot of definition in the statute about any strategic planning process. You really, per statute, you meet once a year to elect officers and sign off on some expenditures. So everything else you're doing is because you've deemed it good practice. But there is a requirement in the statute that a report be submitted to the court. It doesn't say how often or what its contents should be. I happen to have this gigantic spreadsheet that shows from 2004 to present every funding request, and then every funding award, and then every adjustment to it for all those years. I think that'd be a great document to send there. I have found no other use for it, so why not? And then, you know, we could attach all the three-year plans. But what Kim and I were thinking is maybe we should attach a letter from board members. We have two board members this year who have been on since the beginning who may want to, you know, who could provide the complete retrospective. So we were just thinking about that, like a letter from you all might be nice. And then we've got some other documents we could attach, like the currently funded program summary, which is, you know, it's tiny print, but it's got some good information. So anyway, and then we have to figure out which court we're supposed to submit this to. That's the background.
Okay, transition success, you're...
Yeah, this was... So another thing that happened as a result of the organizational assessment is everyone's jobs changed a little bit. Some jobs changed a lot. So everybody has new titles, and we discovered that no one in the office had current business cards. And I thought, while we're ordering small amounts of business cards for ourselves, we should order business cards for board members. So you have business cards, too. They don't have your individual names on them because I didn't know if some of you might not want this at all. The art is by one of my favorite artists who happens to take services, and we paid him for this art, right? And then the cards themselves actually have a little secret. They have a chip inside them, so if you use a smartphone that's not an iPhone, and it's near-field communications enabled, you just tap the card to the back, and it will take you to the website that shows all of the board documents and all of the currently funded programs and how to apply. But that website's also named on the card, so if you're not a Samsung user, it doesn't matter. Anyway, so the magic cards, but it also has the website name. So anyway, I brought them for you all if you're interested in taking some.
Okay, under old business, item A, the agency FY 2017 annual performance measures report begins on page 46. The reports go through page 108, so they're detailed. The document will also be available on the application reporting website at http://ccmhddbrds.org.
That's the site on the cards. And this is in front of you is a separate copy of one of the performance measures reports, because we did not, I don't think we were able to fit it into the book, but Mark copied it this morning.
Okay, great.
For y'all.
Thank you.
And this is a nice one. It shows us what people, I think there are about 178 people in the survey this year, said they want. And some of it is open-ended, like it's not of what's available, what do you want, it's what do you want. So that might help us find some clues about what to fund.
Okay, then, on page 109, we have our current funding priorities, which were approved back in December, I think, this particular briefing memorandum. So this is just a reprint, a refresher for us, and also would provide some food, potentially, for discussion of setting priorities for FY 2019. Is there any discussion on that at this point? Okay, moving on, the meeting schedules are on page 117 to 120. No changes to the meetings or schedules, everything's the same. Okay.
So your next meeting is the 25th, October.
October 25th.
It's because of room availability.
Okay. 8 a.m., right? Mm-hmm. Okay, good. And then, as always, our LIGAS acronyms are included on pages 121 and 122. Do we have any board announcements? Anybody? Bias?
More of a question. I was looking at this music and art festival announcement. I've heard this Nanny's Daughter's Band's not that great. Is that true?
Very entertaining, and they have personal and professional interest in
okay, just wondering.
Okay. Any other announcements? Okay. A Pocaholic. Okay.
What are some of the adult, or some of the volunteer opportunities? Should we contact you? Okay.
I'd like to make a motion to adjourn.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? We are adjourned. Thank you.